All right, good morning, everyone. So we are going to continue in Emirat Hashem in finishing up Mishamayim today in Emirat Hashem. So just a quick review from what we accomplished last time. So we began by quoting the Pasuk in Tehillim Hashamayim, Misaprim Kivod Kel, Umaseh Yadav Magid Harakia. So the Shamayim says, literally translated, we'll just use for now the little translation, although we're going to retranslate it to Emirat Hashem in just a little bit. But the Shamayim says, the heavens tell of God's glory, and the firmament, right? The Rakia tells about Ma'aseh Yadav, tells about the handiwork, the actions of the Ribono Sholom. So in our last class, we focused on the creation of Rakia. So just a quick review. What's the proper definition of Rakia? Sky divider. Excellent. Again, the primary role of the Rakia was to do what? Divide what? Good. Mayim Elyonim, Mayim Tachtonim. Upper waters, lower waters. What was the reaction of the Mayim Tachtonim, the lower waters, to the split?
They started crying.
Why? What was the nature of the cry? Good. One word. Distance or? Separation. Remember, they start crying, excellent, because they are distant from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What's the core of the consolation prize? How does HaKadosh Baruch Hu console the Mayim Tachtonim? Two things, Nisach HaMayim and Karbanos, specifically salt on the Karbanos. Excellent. So that's where we're holding right now. Now I want to fast forward a little bit. Yes.
Sorry for interrupting. Is there any way to turn on your video?
Oh, sorry. Thank you. Okay, I'm sorry about that. Sorry. Okay, thank you. Thank you. I really appreciate all the technical help. Yes. So I did not bring. All right. So I'll make sure. Did it get sent out? It was online. Okay. I'm sorry. I don't have extra copies with me now. I apologize, but Emirat Hashem, I'll bring extra copies to the next class. My apologies. It's a little hard to keep track of where everyone is, where everything is, where everything's supposed to be. So I apologize. Do this for now, and I'll just bring physical copies to the shir as well. My apologies. Okay, so now we're going to pick up in what I think is an incredibly dramatic moment. Take a look at number 6 on your sheet. So here again from David HaMelech, from Sefer Tehillim. David HaMelech writes, Al Naros Bovel. So by the rivers of Bovel, Shom Yashavnu Gam Bachinu, Bizachreinu es Tzion. There we sat, and we cried when we remembered Tzion. So remember again, what is this pasuk a reference to? Just at first glance, what does it appear to be a reference to? Churban. Which Churban? Churban Bayis Rishon. Remember again, first Beis HaMikdash is destroyed by Babel. So it would appear that this pasuk in Tehillim is an allusion to that which occurred after Churban Bayis Rishon. The incredible image is Klal Yisrael being exiled from Eretz Yisrael, and Klal Yisrael sitting on Naros Babel, right by the rivers of Babel. By the way, you know again, because Eretz Yisrael and Babel are neighbors, so those rivers like the Euphrates, the Pras, and other of the major rivers run through both Eretz Yisrael and Babel. So we sat by the rivers of Babel and we cried. Why did we cry? Bizachreinu es Sion. So I want to share with you what I think is probably one of the most moving midrashim. If we look at number 7, the Midrash in Eicha Rabba writes as follows. Ba'osa sha'a, in that moment. Now, let me give you a little bit of the backdrop to this Midrash. The backdrop to this Midrash is that when the Midrash says, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, he did not tell anyone. No one knew about the Churban. The Malachim didn't know about the Churban. The Avos and the Ma'os didn't know about the Churban. Because the Ribono Shel Olam himself, it's so dramatic, was so conflicted. And it was so painful for the Ribono Shel Olam that he could not share this news with anyone out of a concern that if he would share it with someone, they would kiviyachal like talk him out of it. They would talk him out of destroying the Beis HaMikdash. So the Ribono Shel Olam doesn't go ahead and tell anyone. After he destroys the Beis HaMikdash, he summons Yirmiyahu Hanavi. He tells Yirmiyahu, go and tell everyone. It's your job now, Yirmiyahu. You have to go and tell everyone. So the Midrash actually describes, it's a very moving Midrash that describes when Yirmiyahu tells everyone their reaction to the Churban. So he goes and he tells Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu starts pulling out his hair. So how can you do this? I was willing to offer up my one and only son for you. And again, of course, the famous part of this medrash is HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells, Yirmiyahu tells Rachel Imenu. Rachel Imenu, of course, comes out to advocate for her children. HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells her, Mini kolech mibechi ve'einayich min dima. Rachel, you don't have to cry. V'shavu barim l'gvulam klali, so we'll come back. Yirmiyahu goes and he tells Moshe Rabbeinu. So look what happens. And this Moshe Rabbeinu has a unique response, different than everyone else. You'll see why it makes sense that it's Moshe Rabbeinu. Ba'osa Shah, Amar Moshe Yirmiyahu. Moshe says to Yirmiyahu, Lech Lefanai. Yirmiyahu, take me to them. This is incredible. Moshe Rabbeinu says to Yirmiyahu, you see, everyone else, the Avos, the Mos, everyone hears what happens. They fall apart over this news. They cry, they beg, they daven. Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't say anything. He says to him, Yo, take me to the people. Take me to the people. Lech lefanai, she'ilech v'avim, ve'er'eh mi maniach yado aleihem. So Moshe Rabbeinu is the consummate manhig. The consummate manhig, the consummate shepherd, is all about taking care of the flock. So Moshe Rabbeinu hears that his flock is in trouble. He tells Yirmiyahu, take me to them. So Amar lo Yirmiyahu, it's a heartbreaking matter. Yirmiyahu tells Moshe, I can't take you. There are corpses everywhere. The Jews have died along the road, and it's impossible to even traverse the road. There are corpses everywhere. Moshe Rabbeinu says, nevertheless, I want you to take me. Miad, halach Moshe v'Yirmiyahu lefanav. Moshe Rabbeinu goes, Yirmiyahu is in front of him. Ad shegia l'naros bavel. Until they reached Naros Bavel. Ra'ul Moshe. See, you have to imagine this scene. The Jews are sitting by the banks of Bavel, by the banks of the river of Bavel. They're broken. They saw their Beis HaMikdash go up in flames. They saw hundreds of thousands of people brutally murdered, especially again children. We have one of the kinos that Nevuzaradan, who was the Rav HaTabachim, the chief butcher of Nebuchadnezzar, had a bloodlust dafka for children. They saw the most terrible brutality. So they're sitting there all broken. And who do they see? It's incredible. So what happens? Ra'ul Moshe. The people see Moshe Rabbeinu in the distance. So can you imagine this moment? The broken Klal Yisrael sees Moshe Rabbeinu in the distance. And what do they say? Va'amru, va'amru zelazeh, ba ben amram mikivra liftosinu miyad sarinu. And there's a wave of joy that sweeps over the people. Because what do they say? Oh, Ben Amram, Moshe Rabbeinu has come back from the grave to redeem us, to take us back home. Remember, who is Moshe Rabbeinu? Moshe Rabbeinu is the one who delivers Klal Yisrael from every difficult predicament and situation. Whenever there's a problem, Moshe Rabbeinu swoops in, and he saves us, right? He did it with Paro, but he even did it from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? He did it by Chet HaEgel. He did it by the Meraglim. Every single time Klal Yisrael is in trouble, Moshe Rabbeinu always comes to the rescue. So there's a breath of optimism and hope that sweeps through the people. Moshe Rabbeinu is here. He's going to take us back. Yatsa Baskova Amra Gezerehi Milafanai. A bas kol comes out, the heavenly voice comes out and says, no, you're not going home. Not yet. It's a gzeira from me, from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed and that you will be exiled. Miyad amar lehem Moshe. Moshe says to Klal Yisrael, Banai, lahachzir eschem I efshar. My beloved children, I cannot bring you home. Kshekvar nigzer gzeira. For this is the decree of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ela hamakom yachzir eschem v'mehera v'yaniach osam. Moshe Rabbeinu gives them a bracha. It's such a heartbreaking medrash. He tells them, I wish I could bring you home. I would do anything to bring you home. But gezeira, the Ribbono Shel Olam has decreed that you are not to come home now. So I give you a bracha that the Ribbono Shel Olam should bring you home soon. Sheyach makom yachzir eschem v'mehera v'yaniach osam. And then Moshe Rabbeinu had to leave. Ba'osa Shah, hey Ramu Kolam Bebechia Gidola Ad Sha'osa Bechiyasan Lamarom. In that moment, Klal Yisrael began to cry even more intensely than they had before. So if I were to ask you, why do you think the cries after this visit from Moshe Rabbeinu were even worse and more intense than the cries before. So there is ramifications of their actions. Excellent. Good. Why else? You know, you ever have a situation in life, obviously not as dramatic as this, but you're in a bad situation and you make your peace with the bad situation. And then something happens that gives you a glimmer of hope that it's going to get better. And then that glimmer of hope dissipates. Even though you're right back where you were, right before that glimmer of hope. In other words, nothing in the Metzius has changed. Nothing has changed. In other words, you're still in the same difficult predicament. But the fact that I had that hope, it lifted my spirits. And now, when the hope is removed, I fall down even harder. Klal Yisrael recognized what happened. And yes, they realized the impact of their actions. They realized that even Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't save them. But in that moment, you see, I often tried to think to myself what that must have been like. To be able to see Moshe Rabbeinu coming with Yirmiyahu HaNavi in the distance. And after everything that you saw, that hope, Ba ben Amram mikivro liftosenu. Moshe Rabbeinu has literally come back from the dead in order to save us. What a wave of optimism and hope must have swept through the people in that moment. And then the Ribon Shalom himself comes along and he dashes that hope. Was it Kodesh Baruch Hu? He says, no. Gezer him ilafanai. Moshe says, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I can't bring you home, but I give you a bracha that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should return you speedily to your homeland. And at that point, the Medrash says their cries became even more intense. Now, why is this important? Because what the Medrash is commenting on is the Gam Bachinu. Al Naros Bovel, Sham Yashavnu, Gam Bachinu. So interestingly enough, Gam, the word Gam, is usually what we call a ribui. Gam means like something amplified. So the Medrash says, what were the amplified cries when they sat by the banks of the rivers of Babel? So the Medrash says the amplified cries were because of the dashed hopes. Because there was a wave of optimism when Moshe Rabbeinu came. And then when Moshe Rabbeinu has to leave and can't redeem them, it amplifies their pain. Or Gam Bachinu, we were crying the entire time. But the cries became even more intense after Moshe Rabbeinu showing up, after Moshe Rabbeinu's short visit. But if you take a look at number 8, there's a Medrash Pliya. Right? The Medrash, another Medrash. And the Medrash writes, Gam Bachinu Im Hamayim. So it's interesting, is like this. As I mentioned before, the word, now, what is, how would you translate Gam? Also. So Gam also usually means what? And that's a strange question to ask. In addition to, right? Gam is in addition to. So again, you know, so we translate it as also with. So in addition to sounds like Gam Bachinu means what? How would you translate that? If you understand that Gam means in addition to, Gam Bachinu means we cried in addition to something else which was crying. See, the Medrash understands Gam Ribui also to represent an intensification of cries. There was a possibility for redemption, a hope for redemption, and now ultimately again, those hopes were dashed. The Medrash Pliya understands, no. Gam Bachinu means we were crying, but there was someone else crying along with us. Or we were crying along with someone or something else. Who is that? The Medrash writes, number 8, Bachinu Im Hamayim. We cried together with the water. So according to the Medrash Pliya, what's happening over here on the banks of the rivers of Babel is Klal Yisrael is crying and the waters are crying. Now let's take a step back. Why do you think the waters were crying? Because remember again, let's go back to the beginning of creation. The waters were very troubled when the Rakia was created. But the Nechama, the consolation they were given, was the fact that they would be Ole LaHashem. They would find the opportunity to come before our culture, to achieve closeness through two things. Number 1, Nisuch HaMayim. Number 2, salt on Karbanos. But both of those items require a Beis HaMikdash. And now in the absence of the Beis HaMikdash, the waters cry. Yes. So Mayim Shalonu is more of like a technicality issue. right? That's just an issue, ultimately, again, of preventing chametz. I don't necessarily know if that's necessarily something that is part of avoda.
That
was part of the Nechamos. Oh, it could be. I didn't see this. You're saying there's a source.
Very possible, nice and confusing.
No, it sounds great. It sounds definitely right. So that's possible. If you could find me that source, I would love to see that. I would love to see because you could see why it's different than right than Nisach HaMayim because those goes on the Mizbech. But maybe I guess the truth is like if you want to broaden it like that, you know, you could even say in general like the whole basic idea. But with lulav, esrik, hadasim, and aravos, is that those are all things which require water in order to grow. So maybe you could broaden it. That's possible.
It's beautiful. I've heard this message many times, like around Pesach time.
Right. About the water. Okay, good. So you're going to find this for me.
It's possible.
Okay, either way, it's even if you made it up, it's a good thought. I'm saying it could definitely, and then it would just represent an approach that brought water definitely has a much broader role than just Nisuch HaMayim and Melach. Beautiful. So now, let's see what's happening over here. So now, if you can imagine this image, everyone is crying by the banks of the rivers of Bavel. So amazingly enough, we understand why the waters are crying. The waters are crying because now they are fully cut off. The Mayim Tachtonim are officially cut off from the Ribono Shel Olam. Because remember again, the only way the Mayim Tachtonim had the ability to actually go ahead and reach HaKadosh Baruch Hu was through the mechanism of the Beis HaMikdash. Without a Beis HaMikdash, there is no Nisuch HaMayim. Without a Beis HaMikdash, there are no Karbanos. Without Karbanos, there is no Melach. There is no need for salt. So therefore, the waters are crying. The waters are crying because they realized they were effectively cut off. So based on that, why were we crying? I'm sorry?
We were also cut off.
I can't tell who's saying that. No, good. Thank you. I'm sorry. You know, this is the difficulty with the masks. First of all, I apologize because, like, if I ever meet one of you on the street and you were so good. That's true, also. Right? It's true, also. It's an incredible thing. Right? So, we were also crying for the same idea. We were crying for the same reason because we also felt cut off. You see, when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed and we were exiled, there was a feeling amongst Klal Yisrael, this is the end. This is the end. This is the end. How could we exist without a Beis HaMikdash? How could we exist without being in Eretz Yisrael? In fact, if you take a look at number 9, it's from the same capital, 137, Al Naros Bavel. The same capital, in number 9, what do we say? Eich Nashir Es Shir Hashem Al Admas Nechar. So what do we say in that capital? We say, how could we possibly sing Al Admas Nechar on alien soil? How could it be that Jewish life is going to continue? How could it be that Am Yisrael is going to continue? How could it be that there's going to be a meaningful relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu without a Beis HaMikdash, without the Eretz Yisrael? So can you imagine this scene? So Medrash Pliya says, we are sitting by the banks of the waters of Bavel, Nar Bavel, Al Naros Bavel, and everyone's crying. The waters are crying Mayim Tachtonim because they are truly cut off. Without a Beis HaMikdash, they have no way of connecting with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. We are crying because we also assume that without a Beis HaMikdash and without the ability to be in Eretz Yisrael, we are also cut off. But then something amazing happens. What happens? We were wrong. How are we wrong? Remember, the Jews are exiled to Bavel. What does Bavel become? Bavel becomes the very center of Jewish life. Remember again, there are two versions of the Gemara. There's Talmud Bavli, Talmud Yerushalmi. Which one is considered to be more authoritative? Bavli. The major centers of Torah were in Bavel. So something dramatically amazing occurs. We thought when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed that this was the end of the line for Klal Yisrael. Beis HaMikdash is destroyed. Exile from Eretz Yisrael. It's the end of the line. And then something amazing happened. It wasn't. And not only did we survive, but we thrived. Not only did we thrive, but some of the greatest centers of Jewish scholarship, some of the greatest Talmidei Chacham, you know what the Gemara says? There are three reasons you're allowed to leave Eretz Yisrael if you live in Eretz Yisrael. What are the three reasons? Number one. Good. Parnasa. Good. Number two? Refuah. Refuah, true. Although that's more like Sakhanas Nefashas. Good number two. Shidduchim. I thought that was going to be number one, right? Yeah. That's enough, right? So, right? Marriage, Parnasa, and number three? Torah. If you have a Rebbe, right? If you're a Rebbe, if there's a yeshiva that you feel is a better fit for you outside of Eretz Yisrael, you're allowed to leave. Whoever thought that Chazal would even be writing things like that when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed? No one even thought it. Leave Eretz Yisrael for Torah? There's no Torah outside of Eretz Yisrael. And then something absolutely amazing happened. Klal Yisrael rebuilt. Klal Yisrael thrived. You see, we take this kind of stuff for granted. That, of course, Torah, this Torah everywhere in the world. And in this Galus, in America, some of the greatest Torah institutions that have ever existed are here now. So for us, this sounds like, but understand, from the perspective of the Jew who was living through the Churban Bayis Rishon, the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash, they thought this was the end of the line. So everyone is sitting on Naros Bava and they're crying. They're crying. This is it. This is it. There's nothing else to do anymore. We're done. And then something amazing happens. They realize they're wrong. By the way, this appears another time in Sefer Tehillim, in the capital, Mizmor li'Asaf. Elokim ba'o goyim v'nachal asecha. Timu asecha alecha. Samu es yushalayim li'iyim. Right? Literally a song of Asaf. The Gentile nations have come into your Beis HaMikdash. They've defiled it. They've destroyed it. And the Gemara says, Mizmor li'Asaf? A song of Asaf? This is a capital that seeks out the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. What should it be called? So what's the answer? What does the Gemara say? When the Beis HaMikdash was being destroyed, so everyone thought it was the end of Klal Yisrael. But then we realize, Kevan Sheshafa Chamasa Al Itzim Va'avonim, the Ribon Shalom vented his fury on a building. You see, the Beis HaMikdash is a magnificent thing, and we yearn and we pine for it for every single day. But it's a building. It's a structure. Much more important than the building is the nation. See, we thought the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash meant the destruction of Klal Yisrael. And then you quickly realize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu took the Beis HaMikdash instead of us. He vented his fury on a structure so that Klal Yisrael could go on to thrive and become something incredible. So therefore, again, what's amazing over here is, again, Klal Yisrael, the waters all sitting there crying together. Everyone thinks it's the end of the line. The waters were correct. For the waters. I mean, now it's been over 2,000 years since the Mayim HaTachtonim were able to connect with the Ribon Shel Olam. Over 2,000 years. But for us, destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash, destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash, countless catastrophes and tragedies over the millennia, and yet we are still here. Not only are we still here, we are thriving. Not only are we thriving, but we become holier each and every day. The dramatic departure. See, here's what's amazing. So what's the difference between water and between man? Why is it that water was cut off and man was not? There's a very simple reason for this. In the natural world, everything has its place. Everything has its place. Right? Everything has... So for example, you know, we don't have to go into examples, but you know this. For example, with water. Water is a good example. So remember again, the beginning of the world, where was water? Everywhere. Then what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu do? What does he do? He separates. How does he separate? He tells the waters, here are your boundaries, here are your boundaries, and here's water, here's land. That's why it's always interesting if you notice that sometimes, because there have been a number of these, when these hurricanes come along and there's this coastal flooding, it's such a dramatic thing. Because what does that coastal flooding represent, that kind of hashkafic level? What's happening? There's a breaking of balance. There's a breaking of boundaries, right? The water is coming somewhere where it's not supposed to be, right? The waters are supposed to be there and the land is supposed to be here. So when you see these pictures and you see, you know, a few feet of water sitting on top of what was dry land, or again, even in the general world, when you say the erosion of coastlines, to me, like, I don't know what the message is. I don't know what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is trying to tell us. But there's definitely something there. Because the whole essence of creation was boundaries. Everything has a boundary. Everything has a place. Everything has a makom. So the waters are here, land is here. And water can't decide on its own to go somewhere else, just like land can't decide on its own to go somewhere. Just like a zebra can't decide to be a cat, and a cat can't decide to be a deer. That's just the way that it is. Everything in this world has its own ordained place, with one exception. There is one thing in this world that does not have boundaries. What's the one thing in the world that doesn't have boundaries? So Yibon Shalom, absolutely, Chash Baruch 1,000%. But look at number 10 for just a moment. Vayivarech Hashem Elokim. When Chash Baruch Hu blessed Adam and Chav, he tells them, Vayomer Lohem, Elokim, Peru Urevu Umil Ues Haaretz. Okay, so that's the mitzvah to procreate. V'kiv Shuha. Kiv Shuha means what? Conquer it. Uredu B'digas Hayom, rule over the fish of the sea. Uba'ofa Shamayim, and on the birds of the heavens. And amongst all of the animals which inhabit the earth. So this Lashon of Kivshua, what does this mean? Conquer. Chashmah tells him, conquer the world. So the Ramban in number 11 writes, V'kivshua, Nasan lahem koach u'memshala, ba'aretz lasos kirtzonam, bebehemos u'bishratzim v'chol zochali afar. Man could go ahead. Man was given the right, the memshal, the strength and the right to do what he wants with the animals, with the heaven, with the earth, with the sea. It's also interesting, by the way, just as an aside, you know, every once in a while you see a news story about a particular species that is on the brink of extinction. So they say because of overfishing or over this or over that. So it's interesting that I often wonder to myself that we presuppose that every single species is supposed to be here forever. Who says, just like Kadosh Baruch Hu created a Leviathan, he created it and then he took it out. It's, you know, if you go with the Hashkafa that the world was created for man, of course man has to use the word world responsibly. But it's interesting, sometimes look Hashkafically at some of these natural world issues. In any event, so the Ramban says, V'kiv Shua means, Adam, you have the ability to assert your ownership and your autonomy over everything. And isn't this incredible? You ever wonder to yourself, why is it that we have a desire to go to the moon? Like, there's more than enough stuff to do on the earth, right? And there's more than enough problems here that we need to fix. Yet, we have this fixation with getting to the moon. Water on Mars, right? Intergalactic telescopes and all this stuff. Why? Why? Where does that come from? Where does that come from? One word, Kivshua. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us a mandate. And that mandate is conquer. That mandate is understand. It's the same way. Do you know when you're, I don't know the name of it, but you know when you're going, when in Eretz Yisrael, if you're driving out of Yerushalayim, like towards like the Etzion block, Efrat, towards Chevron, towards Maasa Machila, not really Kevar Rachel, different direction. I forgot the name of the road that goes out. They blasted these tunnels into the road. So literally, they have these roads that go through tunnels. You look at it, I always say my kids are always tired of hearing about it because I can't get over this idea of like blasting roads through tunnels. The Ribbono Shel Olam put a mountain somewhere. He put a mountain somewhere. And what does man say? I need to get through the mountain. So what does man do? He blasts his way through the mountain. He blasts his way through the mountain. And what do you think of Chash Baruch Hu's reaction to that is when we do that? What do you think his reaction is? I think it's a big shkoyach. Like, wow, that was great. That was great. Because that's what I want you to do. What I want you to do more than anything is I want you to assert proper autonomy over the world. I want you to master the world. I want you to understand in the world. I want you to understand what is in the depths of the deepest ocean, just like I want you to climb to the top of Mount Everest. Not all of us have to do that, but you understand, meaning that's embedded in us, and I want you to blast your way through mountains. I want you to do that, because if you blast your way through physical mountains, what's the lesson you walk away with? What's the lesson you walk away with? When you blast your way through a mountain, what's the lesson? You can overcome any obstacle and hurdle. When you make a road through a mountain, when you blast your way through a mountain that's been sitting there for who knows how long, and you make a brand new road through it, that means you could overcome your mountains as well. You can overcome the obstacle. And when you go ahead and you get to the depths of the deepest ocean, or you go ahead and land the lunar mission on Mars, and you discover what you're showing really is that the sky is the limit, that you could do anything. Kivshua is the HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells us, you can be whatever you want. You can make of yourself whatever you want. The rest of the universe has its limitations, but you, man, do not. Yes?
There's another concept. I remember a teacher telling us that whenever a Jew tried going into space, they always died on the way.
Well, that is not a happy thought, but... I don't know. Besides Ilan Ramon, I don't know who else was Jewish. And what was the point of that? That Jews shouldn't go into space? Shh, girls, shh, I can't hear. Sorry?
I mean, what I remember, a long time ago, I remember that she was saying that you spend too much money going into space and making use of it in other places. Then she was talking about whenever man tries going into space, they don't
use it. I don't know. I would... You know, I truly believe that one, again.
I hear,
I mean, I don't know. I don't know if that's true or not. I'm sorry, say it again.
Like,
100%. In general, I always cringe a little bit at statements like that, as they presuppose a certain level of knowledge that I don't know how anyone has. I mean, I learned a lot of Torah. I don't see things so crystal clear like that. And it bothers me when people say things with such certainty, like every Jew who died. It's, by the way, every Jew who went into a gas chamber also died. That's another statistic. You know, that's also just like, I don't know. Again, whether or not it should be a priority to go to space, look, remember, I just want to point out, just so you should know, this is not a topic. There's a very good reason why NASA's budget was cut dramatically, right? The entire space endeavor is actually now Elon Musk, a good Jew, right? Is right? It's been privatized. So ultimately, again, you see, so there is an argument to be made that societal dollars maybe should be spent on society. I hear that. Yeah, the Jews, I don't know. I mean, I like to think that when Ilan Ramon Zichron Livracha went up in the space shuttle and he took a little Sefer Torah with him, I can't imagine Ein Kiddush Hashem Gedola Mizo, that there's a Sefer Torah, that the last time that a Sefer Torah was in the atmosphere was Histakel Ba'oraisu Bara Alma, when Ribon Shalom opened up a Sefer Torah, Kiviyachal, and you know, created the world. So I don't know, that Jews aren't supposed to go to space. I'll tell you like this. Jews are supposed to do anything and everything. They're just supposed to do it with Kiddusha. So the idea that Jews shouldn't be going up, I don't know, again, I don't want to, I never like casting aspersions on other people's statements, no matter how foolish they seem to me. But you know, again, I think people who try to pigeonhole Jews, so why should Jews be doctors? Maybe everyone should just be an accountant, you know, and a rabbi. I don't know. I think that the argument, a societal argument about allocation of resources to space travel is a legitimate debate. But to go ahead and say that Jews shouldn't be doing this because of Shamayim, Shamayim LaHashem, I mean, there are other psukim that also indicate the fact that the world also belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that the earth also belongs to Hashem. So, I don't know. I'm sorry?
Does the Kiddushah apply to space?
Say that again?
Or only to Earth?
Yeah.
Does
Why would you? Why not? But I'm saying kivshua means why does the Kadosh Baruch Hu need me to go down to the deepest level of the ocean? What does it matter to me what's on the deepest level of the ocean? Understand, but Aris, remember again, it says Ofa Shamayim. So what's Shamayim? Shamayim is only where the birds fly. Shamayim is a very expansive statement. Remember, Kadosh Baruch Hu could have just said, by the way, just go ahead and focus on Kivshua, Baltimore, Lakewood, and Yerushalayim. Right? He could have also just said that. That would have been a bit more explicit. Right? But I'm saying, he does say the depths of the ocean and the heavens. So if HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying the depths of the oceans and the heavens, why? Well, why do I need to know what's in the depths of the ocean? What does it matter? What does it matter? Just like, again, so what do I need to know about that? You can make the argument that to live a very simple utilitarian life, you can focus on what's here. You don't need to be interested in anything else. I think this is what the Ramban is explicitly saying as well. Look, if you even look at his words, he says, Livnos lachornatua mahara lachtov nechoshes ukiyotse bazeh. Kiyotse bazeh means, Ramban is saying, unlock the secrets of the universe. Unlock the secrets of the universe. There are secrets that are being hidden, ultimately, again, in the depths of the sea. There are secrets that are being hidden in the heights of the heavens. There are secrets in space. Again, I don't know that I'm necessarily making a statement that space exploration is a Jewish value. Okay, I'm just going to say, this is my opinion, not a statement of fact. I think it is terribly wrong to say that it is contrary to Jewish values. I think that is a very narrow-minded, tunnel vision approach to the world. That like Jews, we should be interested in this. And by the way, I just want to point out to you, this is, and I don't want to get really too much into this topic, but I feel it's maybe important to say, this tunnel vision mindset is at the root of incredible Chilul Hashem that's unfolding in the Jewish community now. When you look at what is going on in some of the communities in New York and in Eretz Yisrael, and you see people doing absolutely heinous acts, not adhering to proper medical advice, burning masks in the street, making Chilul Hashem, threatening other Jews, how could it be that a Jew ignores science? How could it be that a Jew ignores science? Right? Science says to us, you don't have to be the most machmir person. You wear a mask, you social distance, and hopefully you get there. No one argues that it works. Some people argue, but you always have arguments. The general consensus is, how do you ignore that? How do you ignore when you live in a country and there are laws? How do you ignore those laws? Where do you have the chutzpah to ignore those laws just because you live amongst everyone else? Oh, it's because all your neighbors are like you. And believe, like, how do you ignore? There's a concept. Dina de malchusa dina. You see, I think what ends up happening sometimes is because we lived in ghettos for so many centuries, we very often are plagued by ghetto thinking. And ghetto thinking says there's the Gayim and there's us. There's their rules and there are our rules. And that is, yeah, it's true. There are the Gayim and there are us. That is 100% true. We have to be separate. Kiddushim Tiyu. We have to create Gidor. We have to create boundaries. But we live in a part of society. Whether that's secular Israeli society or whether that's American society. If you are a citizen of a country, you are bound by the laws of that country without exception. And if you don't like it, move. You don't have to live there. No one's forced to live anywhere they don't want to live. You don't like the laws? Go somewhere else. And sometimes that, I feel, this is just my opinion. I'm going off a little bit on a rant just for a moment, right? I feel that sometimes, and it breaks my heart because unfortunately I hear it too often, especially like, I don't know if it's a seminary thing or other things like this, but sometimes there's very tunnel-like vision. Jews don't go to space. What does that mean? Jews don't go to space. Like, all right, most Jews don't go to space. That is a true statement. The overwhelming majority of Jews don't go to space. That is, but you're making a hashkafic statement that Jews don't go to space because the heavens belong to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Where is that? I learned Shulchan Aruch. I learned Shas. Where is that? What's the makar for that? And I can tell you, there is no makar for that. You could say that's your hashkafa, that Jews don't go to space. Good. Everybody's entitled to their hashkafa. Just like my hashkafa is that your hashkafa is wrong. Right? But again, you could have that hashkafa. But we have to be so careful to avoid that tunnel ghetto thinking. That this is what Jews do. This is how Jews are. It's always us versus them. It's always everything is out to wrong us, to get us to this, to that. Because when you live like that, it has terribly detrimental consequences. As I think Mamish we're seeing unfolding now in our communities. I mean, Alta, I'm sure you girls know, because I'm sure you follow the news. You know, the Chilul Hashem that is coming out now as a result of Klal Yisrael. The Chilul Hashem that we, and I say we because we're one nation. It's not like us and them. We're all the same people. But the Chilul Hashem that Klal Yisrael is creating now, It's worse than anything that the virus could ever do. Whatever the detrimental effects of the virus will be, the virus will be. But the way so many now in the greater world are looking at Klal Yisrael, because of a lot of our, we did this to ourselves, because a lot of our reckless behaviors, that damage, you know, Chilul Hashem is the worst possible thing you could do, but that damage hopefully will be reparable. Okay, as we were saying, let's finish up Parak Shira. Okay, so now, okay, yes. So, the Shamayim say Tachash Baruch Hu. So here's the difference ultimately again between Shamayim and man. Everything else in nature is limited in its framework and scope. And I apologize by forgetting very passionate. Girls, there's one thing I want to tell you. If it's this, never let anyone tell you you can or you can't be something. If anyone ever tells you that, never let anyone tell you. You could be whatever you want to be. Whatever you want to be in life, you could be. And if someone says, well, Jews don't do this, unless they're talking about eating chazer, right? The statement is not true. The statement is not true. I'm sorry? Okay, so I'm 100%. Yeah, I'm not. No. I'm not descending into things like that, like gender roles. 100%. You understand? I'm making that statement in the context of a Torah hashkafa. That in terms of what you would like to accomplish in life, if there's something you'd like to accomplish, I'm not talking about fluidity of gender roles, right? Or of that? No, that maybe we'll do that class next semester. But for now, we're focusing on. Let me just finish up this parak shira. So now, just to kind of close this out. So the Shamayim, so we see that in nature, the way the natural world was created, is that at the end of the day, everything has its place, with one exception. Now again, of course, man also has his place, right? Man can't become a woman, woman can't become a man, man can't become a bird, right? Man can't be an animal. So of course, but in the context of everything else is much more limited in scope, man has this mandate of Kivshua. And Kivshua means blast holes through mountains to make roads, accomplish things, understand the complexities of the universe, understand the complexities of yourself. Go on and accomplish and do something great. So now we'll loop this all the way back, and with this we'll conclude. Perhaps this is the meaning of the statement in Perek Shira. What does the Shamayim say? HaShamayim, I put it again in number 12, which is just a pasuk from Tehillim. Well, you can look back in number 1. Shamayim, what does the Shamayim say? HaShamayim Misaprim Kibot Kel. Now again, the heavens themselves speak to the glory of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now we know this. We know this because remember, the Rambam says in number 13, in Hilchos Yisod Torah, Heich Yadarach La'avos Lirasa. How do you come to love and to revere HaKadosh Baruch Hu? B'shah she'is bonin ha'adam b'masof u'beruav ha'nifla ma'gedolim. V'yira mehen chachmas u'she'ilan erach v'lokates. So this is the Rambam. The Rambam says, how do you come to a love of Hashem? Through nature. And I think anyone who's ever been in close contact with nature could appreciate this statement. You know, you see, now it's autumn, you see the leaves turning colors. There's something magnificently beautiful about that, and spiritual about that. You see a sunrise, a sunset, or you go to a place where there's not a lot of natural light, and you see all of the stars which light up the sky. It's dramatic. It's incredibly dramatic and incredibly, yes.
I'm
reading number 13. Okay. You go ahead and you see all of this. The Rambam says, through HaKadosh Baruch Hu's creations, you can fall in love with Hashem. You could fall in love with Hashem through His creations. So that's the pshat in Parak Shira. HaShamayim Misaprim Kivod Kel. You want to fall in love with the awesomeness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I know it sounds strange, right? But that's our goal. Right? Our goal is not to have a platonic relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Our goal is not just to be friends. V'yahavta es Hashem Elokecha b'chol levavcha b'chol nafshecha. The goal is to experience passionate love. The Rambam, in fact, says that I'm supposed to love Hashem as a man loves a woman. That's the example of the love that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that the Rambam gives. So a love between a man and a woman, which is a beautiful, fulfilling, passionate, meaningful love, that's the type of love, obviously in a different kind of way, that I'm supposed to feel towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the Shemayim says, HaShemayim Misaprim Kavod Kel. If you want to begin to fall in love with the Ribbono Shel Olam, look at me. Look at the heavens, right? Look at the heavens. Shemayim Misaprim Kavod Kel. Look up into the heavens and you will begin to see the beauty of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But then Shemayim goes on, and what does it say? Umaaseh Yadav Magid Harakia. So remember again, how did we translate that phrase? we translated it as Masiyah de Magid Rakia, we translated it as the Rakia speaks of the handiwork of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But maybe we have to translate it a little bit differently. Umaseyadav Magid HaRakia, the Rakia speaks about Maseyadav, speaks about the actions. The actions of who? The actions of who? The actions of man. You see, everyone looks up to the heavens because to the heavens you gain a glimpse of the greatness of the Ribono Shel Olam, the awesomeness of the Ribono Shel Olam. So everyone talks about the heavens because the heavens show us. Hashamayim misaprim kavod kel. The Shemayim tells us, it telegraphs to us, it messages us about the greatness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What do the heavens talk about? Umaseyad of Magid Rakia. The heavens talk about us. Because the heavens say, yeah, we're great, we're beautiful and fantastic, but we are what we are. There's no growth. There's no evolution. There's no change. There's no movement. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created us, and we are what we are. But look at man. Look at man. Maseyadav Magid Rakia. The Rakia speaks out the Maseyadav, the actions of man. Look at what man could do. Look at what man could become. Look at what man could create. Isn't it incredible? Perek Shir telling us, everyone looks up to the heavens to glean a glimpse of the greatness of the Ribono Shel Olam and to fall in love with the Ribono Shel Olam through his creations. But the heavens don't talk about themselves. Maseyadav Magid Rakia. The heavens talk about us. Because the heavens realize that as expansive and as beautiful and as incredible as they are, they pale in comparison to man. For man has the ability to blast mountains through tunnels. Man has the ability to move mountains to accomplish things. Man has the gift and the obligation, the mandate of the Kivshua. Man could constantly become a better version of him or herself each and every day. And that is something that the Rakia speaks about each and every day as well. All right, we'll stop over here for today. Well, let me ask Hashem, continue with Parak Shira on Monday. And Shabbat to everyone. Can I ask you someone bring back this iPad to Mrs. Rosenbaum? Thank you. Have a good day.